Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. China's top lawmaking body has passed a resolution setting the stage for a national security law to be enacted in Hong Kong. The National People's Congress, China's parliament, passed the resolution on the final day of its annual parliamentary session today. Now the events follow months of protests that have brought the city and its economy to a standstill. To get the latest on what's been happening in Hong Kong and the outlook for China's economy, we're joined by Mr. Tommy Tse, head of Greater China Research at OCBC Bank. Tommy, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Great. So first I want to ask you, starting in Hong Kong, what are your thoughts on the latest move? I mean, was this expected?
Well, I think it depends. I would say for some people actually, they think it's quite a big surprise because it's really a big challenge to the foundation of the recorded one country, two systems. Mm-hmm. But I mean, from the China's perspective, it could be understandable because I think it's increasingly become the problem for China to manage in terms of the national security issues. I think that's part of the reason why China tried to push ahead with this particular law.
Okay, now, and earlier this week, EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell said that China's efforts to tighten its grip on Hong Kong pose a threat to the rules-based international order. What do you expect to happen next? I mean, what impact do you see this happening on the economy?
I think this is a very tricky situation right now. I think, how severe the impact is, I think to me, it really depends on the reaction from the US or maybe EU or UK. I mean, right now, I think which is in focus is really the reaction from the US. So as we know, the US actually treat Hong Kong differently mm-hmm. from the mainland China because of something we call the political autonomy we are seeing in Hong Kong. So I think that's the part actually may potentially have the profound impact on the economy as well on the financial markets. If we look at the special treatment of the US in Hong Kong situation, I think there's roughly about three special treatments given by the U.S. government to Hong Kong. I mean, the first one is really we call the free conversion between the Hong Kong dollar and the U.S. dollar. I mean, the second special treatment was regarding something we call the special trading status. So without this trading status, actually the Hong Kong's trade with the U.S. will be subject to the tariff we saw last year the Trump administration imposed on the Chinese goods. But with this special trading status, actually the U.S. literally differentiates the Hong Kong, you know, the exporters different from the mainland exporters. So that's particularly important. I mean, the last special treatment given by the U.S. to the Hong Kong is really the Hong Kong's ability to import, we call some kind of sensitive technology from the U.S. Because we know the U.S. actually restricts the export of the sensitive technology to China, but that is not necessarily the case for Hong Kong. So we are going to see those three special treatments could be challenged by the Trump administration under the new rule. I think that's the part actually markets will be monitoring very carefully and very closely to assess the potential impact on Hong Kong as well as other markets.
Yes, Tommy, and you know, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has already said that Hong Kong no longer enjoys the same levels of autonomy as before. So if you were to quantify this, I mean, how significant are these moves if they were to pull back some of those special status measures?
Yes, I think it's quite tricky at the moment because we are still not quite sure how the U.S. is going to react. So far, what we only knew that the comments from Mr. Pompeo, right? So other than that, we're not quite sure. So my own guess is that even though the U.S. may reassess what we call the political autonomy situation of Hong Kong, that may not necessarily trigger the revoke of all the special treatments. So we might see potentially the partial revoke of the special treatments. So I'm still thinking it does not make economic sense for the U.S. to really remove this special trading status for Hong Kong. I mean, for two reasons. I mean, the first reason is that Hong Kong is one of the key contributors to the goods trade surplus for the U.S. As we know, you know, the Trump administration really want to build up its, you know, the trade position. I think to remove Hong Kong from that period may not make economic sense at the current stage. I mean, the second reason, if you look at the foreign direct investment from the U.S. companies in Hong Kong, so actually on a cumulative basis, we have more than $80 billion from the U.S. companies in Hong Kong. So
right.
That may also potentially under the threat. So I think based on that, I think from the pure economic perspective, I think the U.S. may still keep that. But now we have the political calculation behind. So that made make the entire situation more complex. So in the worst case scenario, the U.S. is really going to remove that particular special trading status for Hong Kong, I think we should expect kind of the very, big volatility in the market. It's difficult to quantify to the current stage, but I mean, I'm sure we're going to see a big impact there.
And it is a difficult position because obviously Hong Kong is a massive financial hub as well. I want to ask, some analysts have said that we could see this law enacted as soon as August, but what are you looking at next? What will be some of the key measures that you'll be looking out for coming out of Hong Kong after this?
I think the law. I agree. I think August could be a window for China to enact the law. So the next will be again when the US is going to change the special treatment for Hong Kong. I think seems like September could be the window. I mean, it's really the US want to change this, we call it the special trading status. So I think September is the window we should watch out for. I mean, of course, other than that, I think to me, it's also a bit tricky for US to overreact because as we know, most of the countries in the world still recognize Hong Kong as part of China. So I think it's still more like a domestic issue to some extent. So that's why I think to me, the reaction from the US will be mainly from the economic perspective. So the other thing maybe we can watch out for is the potential sanction from the U.S. They may potentially sanction, impose a sanction on the individuals from Hong Kong or from mainland China, who are potentially involved in this kind of the national security law. I think that's the possible reaction we might see from the U.S. Then, of course, the tricky thing is, well, the U.S. extend the sanction to the financial institution, right? I mean, if let's say whoever or whichever, institution who deal with the people of the sanction, will that be also under the target by the U.S. Government? So I think that's the tricky part right now we are seeing. So we still need to wait for more details about that.
We're speaking to Tommy Tsia, head of Greater China Research at OCBC Bank. Now, Tommy, moving over and taking a look at China, this year no set growth targets were put forward. And today, China's premier said that China's measures to revive its economy are forceful and targeted and will support people's lives and livelihoods. And he also stressed that Beijing will not flood the economy with liquidity. But what are you looking out for China's economy for the year? I mean, earlier we saw China's first quarter GDP contract by 6.8%. So what are you looking at for the full year?
Yes, I think, as we know, there is no specific growth target this year for China, partially because of the uncertainty due to the COVID-19, as well as the trade outlook. So I think, to me, even though without this specific growth target for this year, I think it's still possible, for China to target maybe around 2% internally. I mean, for two reasons. I mean, the first reason is, as we know, there's no target on the aggregate levels. However, China still set quite a number of targets for the subcomponents. For example, like how many jobs they want to create, what's the unemployment rate they are targeting, what's the M2, what's the financing target, all those things. I mean, if let's say China is able to meet all those subcomponent targets, I think it's still feasible for China to achieve about 2% on the aggregate level. I mean, that's the first reason. The second reason, as we know, since 2010, China has already have something we call the double GDP and the double income target for next 10 years, right? So this year is the last year for this double GDP and the double income target. So if we do an assessment right now, looks like the double GDP is almost impossible. Because if you want to achieve the double GDP target from 2010 level, we need at least 5%+ growth for this year, which is quite unlikely at the current stage. So, but for the double income, it seems like much easier. The threshold line for the double income target is lower. As long as China can grow 1.75% for this year, so they are able to achieve this double income target. So if we think from the policy perspective, you miss one target, but if you can achieve another target, that might not be so bad. Right? I think from that perspective, if we put all the puzzle together, seems like to me 2% is still a reasonable target. Internally, I mean, for Chinese government.
And you're looking for this growth to pick up in the last half of the year or the last quarter?
Personally, I think we should expect the growth to return to positive in the second half of the year. But the tricky part is the pace of the recovery still remains uncertain. That really depends on how the global pandemic play out, as well as the U.S.-China tension story.
And looking at China from a currency perspective as well, you know, offshore yuan hit its all-time historic low earlier today, and we saw a bit of a rebound. We've got some US-China tension continuing to rise. What are you looking at from the currency? Can we expect the yuan to be weakened further?
Yes, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of pressure for yuan to weaken further. I mean, unfortunately, renminbi was kind of caught in the crossfire between the US and China. So if we compare same time last year, in May last year, actually, we have the similar depreciation pressure for yuan because of the trade war story. I think for this year, the US-China tension seems like it's more free in the moment because we have more parameters driving behind. It's not only the trade. I mean, trade is still one of the problems. I think other than trade, we have the Hong Kong issues, we have the pandemic issues, we have the technology issues. So that's really, making the situation very complex at the moment. So I think yuan, unfortunately, is the victim of this free-fall of the bilateral relationship between the two largest economies. So that's the near-term outlook. But in the medium term, I mean, frankly speaking, I do feel we have a lot of factors to support the yuan, frankly speaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least we have 3 to 4 strong reasons to support the yuan at the current stage in the medium term. I mean, the first reason is we think this dollar strength may not be sustainable. I mean, because if you look at the Fed balance sheet, the Fed balance sheet has already ballooned more than $7 trillion. I think we have so many liquidity coming from the Fed. So I think that is negative usually for the dollar. So that's why I think we do question how sustainable the dollar strength can last. I mean, that's the first factor. So, I mean, if you look at the second factor in terms of the yield differential, for example, I mean, the China-US yield differential continue to widen, in fact. So that actually making quite attractive, actually, I would say, for the foreign investors to hold the Chinese assets because of this the yield buffer there. I mean, that's the second reason. I mean, the third reason is I also think, the renminbi should be kind of awarded by the China's prudence in the monetary policy. Just now we talk about, globally, we have so many central banks that are printing money, but the Chinese central bank, seems like they are the only few still have the room for the conventional easing, right? They are the only few that can still cut in the interest rate. So sometimes I do feel they may be a little bit too conservative for the Chinese central bank, but to some extent, I think that should be good news for the currency stability because they are really prudent. They should be awarded for that. But at least we didn't see the award coming at the moment because of the trade tension. So once this trade tension maybe can ease a little bit, I do feel supportive for renminbi in the medium term.
Well, Tommy, there's so much that we could be covering today so much news coming out of China and Hong Kong today. So, but that's unfortunately all we've got time for. So thank you so much for your time. I'm sure we'll catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. All the best.
Thank you. You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3, and we've been speaking to Tommy Jie, head of Greater China Research at OCBC Bank.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.